We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
News and Talk 1380 WALK. Our goal is to keep you healthy, keep you informed, keep you updated. I'm telling you, Dr. Claggett, I am just concerned. I was in several places, even at breakfast this morning. You saw the couple walk by us, and I kind of jokingly said, man, they ain't got on a mask. They got on some nice jogging suits, but they ain't got on no mask. And so they went to try to get into the restaurant, and to the restaurant credit, I'll tell you, they tried to get into Thumbs Up. And Thumbs Up told them, you cannot come in here without a mask. And they had to walk up to the end of the store. Now, they little convenience store on the corner, got smart, and now they sell them for $3 or whatever. But they had to walk up to the store, get a mask, and then come back down. People are just, is it what? Have they been lulled to sleep, or do you just think people now believe they cannot get it, or they don't give a damn? What do you think is the public sentiment on that issue?
Well, I think there's a lot of factors that are playing a part in people doing those things. Part of it is just a disregard for doing what you've been told to do. Some of it is just an...
In other words, they're just hard-headed.
Yeah. Some of it is a miseducation about the virus. There are still a lot of myths and conspiracies about the virus out there that lull people into believing that we're not in the middle of a pandemic, that this is all a hoax. And then there is just the lack of discipline that some people have. That's no different than... what we see in any other disease that a patient might have, and we tell them what to do, and they choose not to do it.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of factors involved with people doing what they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that a lot of people just have never come across somebody who's died or had a bad outcome from it.
So. That will make you change your mind. Well, that's what worked for me now. I would tell the people, for me, it was Mike Morrell and dude who do all the catering for me. And I'm looking up at TV. They tell him he's dead. Whoa. What you mean he dead?
Yeah.
I just talked to this dude like a month or so ago. And he went in the hospital shortly thereafter. And, brother, he went in on the respirator and never got off of one. But walk us through. So I really do want to appeal to our people. Not out of love, really, to be honest with you, because I've had family members and others. And they've gotten over it, but now I'm going to have to keep bringing people on here. I'm going to make sure that on Monday, as soon as you jump off, I'll bring somebody on here who suffered through COVID, got over it, now having what we call long haulers disease. They are still having associated health problems, although they are testing now COVID negative with positive antibodies, but they're having lung issue, they're having long-term heart issues. They're having memory fogs. Before we even get to the number, talk about some of these. Because have you gotten to the point where you are having to see clients, or are you aware, or do you all track clients who leave from your hospital negative, right? They were positive. You know they had it. Eventually, do y'all test before they exit to make sure they're negative, or y'all just go through the 14-day protocol and just assume they are?
Yeah, we typically don't retest. So once you test and you're positive, right, we don't retest you.
You don't retest. So people, the assumption is if you have these 4 days, or 3 or 4 days, whatever the CDC standard is, and they'll change a little bit, of no fever, no diarrhea, all of the associated things with this, that you show none of those symptoms, you've had it, you've been quarantined for 14 days, that you are, quote unquote, no longer a carrier of the virus, is the assumption, roughly.
Yeah, the assumption is that you will get over the infection over, at some period of time. And if you don't exhibit any symptoms, then and a period of time has elapsed, that you are likely over it.
Now, are you saying, because I know you all would give me this cautious doctor language, the period of time was 14 days. Has that changed?
Yeah, I've got to look up the CDC recommendations now. CDC changes it a lot. Okay. Typically, most people will run their course within 14 days
of not having symptoms. Right. What is explaining now the long hauler syndrome, where this virus has gone through, you pass it, but it has done internal damage that we're seeing, everything from eye disease down to, what is that attributed to?
Yeah. So before we talk about long haulers, let's just start with just an overview, because you probably have a number of listeners that haven't necessarily been following this.
I will tell them before you get started, if you got questions about this virus for Dr. Claggett, you can start calling now, because we have him on here so he can answer your specific questions and give you information. If you got any questions at all, you can call him at 404-892-2703. Go ahead, Doc. It's on you.
So remember, we're talking about a virus, an RNA virus called SARS-CoV-2, which causes a disease called COVID-19. And the symptoms that you generally get from the infection are attributable to respiratory symptoms. So most often people will develop a fever, cough, shortness of breath, muscle aches, joint pains, fatigue, sometimes GI symptoms of diarrhea. And we know that once you come in contact with the infection, which is typically passed on through respiratory droplets that you inhale, that there can be an incubation period on average of up to 5 days, can be a little bit longer, but on average up to 5 days before people necessarily show symptoms. We can test for the infection, and we do that through a test called reverse transcriptase polymerase chain reaction, or PCR testing, where we're looking for evidence of the RNA virus that we can detect. That's the most definitive test for the infection. We do look for antibodies as well. Antibodies show us evidence that you've been exposed to the infection at some point in time in the past. Will not necessarily date the timing of that. Treatment. We've come a long ways over the last several months of treatment. There remains no cure. There is no vaccine. We are in phase 3 trials for some vaccines. We hope to have one at the early part of 2021. But we have gotten better at treatment. And we've had a lot of things thrown out over the course of the last several months, some of which have been unfortunate because they've not been shown to show any real benefit. When we talk about treatment and benefit, we really want to talk about randomized controlled trials where we have patients that receive the medicine and those who do not receive the medicine randomized over time, and we compare the two groups. But the treatments we have right now, we actually have some that are fairly effective.
All right, let's do this, Doc. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to pick up on treatments. What are we now doing differently? What are we finding works better now that we 5, 6, 7 months into this virus and disease? We're going to skip the 2-minute workout and come back with Dr. Claggett. If you have any questions about SARS-CoV-2, coronavirus, or COVID-19 virus, if you've had it, if you got it, if you want to know how it works, if you want to know what the treatment protocol is, if you want to know whether you're an asymptomatic spreader or anything, can you get it twice with the impending flu season? What do we need to be doing? Do we need to take flu shots? And any of that you want to know, we're going to try to get to it today with Dr. Claggett. We got to take a break, skipping the 2-minute workout so we can bring you some real information. Don't go into place. It's Too Much Truth with Derek Bozeman on News and Talk 1380 WALK.
Call us at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380 WALK. WALK 80 WALK.
Fellas, I'm ready to get up and do my thing.
Maybe we can work it out.
Work
it out.
One and two and three
work
and four.
It's the 2-minute workout with Derek Bozeman.
Workout. We got a whole lot more important stuff to talk about. Dr. Claggett, you were talking treatment. What is happening on the treatment front with SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19?
So treatment-wise, we've come a long ways. We've got some decent medications that will help us. The most promising has been the use of steroids, dexamethasone or decadron. We've discovered through a trial that patients who are COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2 positive, who show symptoms of hypoxemia or low oxygen level, that we've done studies using decadron, which have shown significant improvement in their mortality or death. So we compare those who get decadron versus those who do not get decadron. Those who got decadron had a reduction in their death or mortality rate. So we now use decadron in patients who show some signs of hypoxemia with the SARS-CoV-2. You should not take any steroids without the supervision or recommendation of a physician. So let me just say that to begin with. The other medication that we've had some success with, which is remdesivir, we talked about that early in the course of this disease. It did not show the promising results of the steroids, but it did show that it did reduce the duration of the disease. It did not have any impact on the life expectancy or mortality rate. So we do use remdesivir as well with select patients. Those patients have to be screened. That's an IV medication. It has to be given in the hospital. We give it for a number of days. The third medicine that your treatment that you're seeing that has not been studied in a randomized controlled fashion is the use of plasma, with the idea being that we can infer some immunity through antibodies. We don't have enough information on that just yet. It did receive emergency use authorization by the FDA, which fast-tracked it, but there's no randomized studies, controlled studies that show its benefits. So that is still outstanding. And then the issue of vaccines, we're in our third, in our phase 3 trial for vaccines. So that is promising, hopefully.
The president said you're going to have one by October. Within the next 30 days.
Well, a couple of things that you have to keep in mind, too. And, the exact timeline, I don't know when it's going to be there. My prediction is that it'll be probably in 2021 that we'll see it. But even when we do see it, the question then is you have to scale up the production of the vaccine. And then you have to decide who gets the vaccine. And obviously the people who get the vaccine are most likely going to be those who are at highest risk, right? Healthcare workers, frontline workers, people who are immunocompromised to some degree. So even as you work through the protocols of who gets it, you're still looking at into, even if something came in 2020, I can't imagine in a, I'd be surprised, and maybe I'm wrong, but I'd be surprised that in 2020 you'd see large-scale availability of a vaccine for the general public. But we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Right now, we know that, you know, the FDA, all of the regulatory authorities, NIH, all of the National Institute of Health, Fauci's organization, all of the screening, peer reviews. I mean, doctors are screaming that we need to just stop with this charade, because if a vaccine is developed this quickly, if one became available in October, one thing we know that it would not have had is the kind of longitudinal study or what are y'all peer-reviewed. Nobody's looking at the data, but I guess Merck and these private pharmacies are developing this. Jim, tell us how generally a vaccine would be rolled out. Because these pharmacies have a huge financial incentive. Federal government had given them basically unlimited money. There's about four of them who are working on one. And they can tell you, we got one tomorrow, but who have they tested it on?
Yeah.
Who would they be able to test it on in that period of time?
Yeah, so let me just say this. I don't know the exact protocol of how they take the medication from approval to commercializing it and scaling it up, and the intricacies of that I'm not well versed in. But let me just say this. I doubt very seriously, speaking to the confidence of medications and the process we have in place, mm-hmm. I would doubt very seriously in a country like ours, in a world that is so data-driven, evidence-based, peer-reviewed process, that we have any medication that or vaccine that will be rolled out in mass to the general population without being scrutinized in a very serious scientific way. So, look, we can just look at the history of COVID-19 and all the anecdotal treatments that have been thrown out, from hydroxychloroquine to all these other things. Eventually, all of these medicines have to be, or vaccines have to withstand the scientific peer-reviewed process. And that will inevitably happen. So I feel very comfortable that when we do get a vaccine, that it will be vetted over time in a very serious way, that we will identify whether it has true value or not and what its limitations are. But let's also remember that when you give somebody a vaccine, just because you get the vaccine doesn't mean you're not going to necessarily get the infection right away, right? And so the vaccine is given, you have to build up an immune response. That takes a couple weeks to build up that response, right? You also have to make sure that whatever we're vaccinating you against, that there are no mutations in the virus in such a way that the renders the vaccine ineffective, right? We know that from the use of our influenza vaccine, right? Every year we change the influenza vaccine because we have mutations of the influenza virus. We do know that there are mutations in the SARS-CoV-2 virus. We've seen people who have now had second infections, right? There's been at least three or four cases around the world, one of which was in the United States, of a second infection, not with the same virus, with a different genome, or the genetic material has changed, or genetic code has changed, so mutation. So we will see that. So even with vaccines, you still have to deal with the risk that there may be mutations and so forth. So all of that is to say that we've got good diagnostic testing right now. We know what's effective, right? Social distancing, wearing your mask. We have decent treatment if you get it. Doesn't mean that we can cure you, but we are more effective in treating some patients. And then we are working aggressively towards a vaccine. So what have we learned?
All right, we got to take a break. Remember, every 15, we got to take a break. So on the other side of the break, we'll pick up where you just left off. What have we learned? What have we learned? Again, our special guest is Dr. Von Claggett. He is a practicing physician. He is in the hospital every day looking at SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19 patients, treating them, getting them well, sending them out the door, and every now and then pronouncing them expired. That's real. You know, that's real. And we'll be back in a moment. If you got any questions, comments, then call us up. 404-892-2703. We'll be back on News and Talk 1380 WALK. I'll be right back.
Call us at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380 WALK. Okay. Call us at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380 WALK.
Okay. For the radio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I'm a DC soldier, New Orleans stunner. If your girl leave me, I'ma take everything from her. Leave how you came, pay your money, clean your room up. I'ma buy me some new nigga and buy a 4Runner. I won't get a limp in my heavy, and I like it from the way up steady. I know I got some big lips, but I ain't tripping. Then mama, I love some sex, but I ain't. Now prepare yourself for smooth whipping. You don't want it, girl, you don't know what you missing. I'm the baddest boss player walking. You ain't heard, I got a
all right, my microphone falling off the stand and everything over here, but we're going to make it do what it do. I was in here trying to put my dinner on. I had to eat before 7 o'clock, and I had to run, put my stuff in the stove here. Give me a stovetop stuffing. Go ahead, Dr. Clack, as you were saying. Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Derek. You there?
Yeah, we're here.
All right. I'm going to be courteous. Had you on mute. So let's talk about what we've learned so far, because we've learned a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing we've learned is how to keep yourself safe.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's really the most important thing. But what have we learned? We know that this is a highly contagious respiratory droplet-borne illness that can be spread from person to person within close contact. Okay?
Yeah.
We know that transmission can be significantly reduced through social distancing. Staying 6 feet or more away from folks,
right.
Wearing a mask,
right.
Washing your hands, keeping your hands out of your eyes, your nose, your mouth, okay? We know that when people die, and the vast majority of people will survive this, by the way,
right.
But when people die, most often they die from what we call acute respiratory distress syndrome. That is an overwhelming inflammatory response within the lungs that impairs the lungs' ability to exchange gases, and that leads to ultimately is the primary cause of why they die. But we have discovered over time that people become what we call coagulopathic, meaning that their blood clots. And we've seen clots form in the lungs and throughout the body in different areas, and that may also contribute to some death.
And that's okay. Another thing that you all also, another medical protocol, y'all do use blood thinners on certain people.
On certain patients, we use blood thinners. Again, I always say medicines, I'm real careful to tell people, you should not take any medication over the counter or prescribed without authorization from the physician. But yes, we do sometimes use blood thinners. We know the steroids work. I mean, if I had to tell you from my personal experience with taking care of countless numbers of COVID patients, the one drug that's made that made a big difference is the use of steroids.
So that's because we weren't talking. That's relatively new, although y'all been using it
for a while.
But to see it now over time showing great benefit is something relatively new.
Yeah, relatively new, meaning that, remember, we first got hit with this in early March.
Right.
Somewhere around May, middle, late May, we began to realize steroids were making a difference, and then we were able to put it through a randomized controlled trial, right? Mm-hmm. And, again, that's how we know things work. We don't think things work because our gestalt or our
gut says
that it works.
You've been looking at over time with people who had the disease.
Yeah.
What is it in a steroid? I mean, I'm about to become a medical doctor. These endothelial cells, is that the right name? Something like that. that are impacted.
So remember that the virus attaches to what we call the ACE2 receptor by way of its spike protein.
Right.
Spike protein, which is a protein on the surface of the virus, has an affinity for a certain type of receptor on certain cells, and that receptor is what we call the ACE2 receptor. Now, the ACE2 receptor is not found on every cell in the body, right? There's trillions of cells in the body. But it's not found on every cell type. It's only found in certain cells, the most notably in the lower respiratory epithelial cells, which is why people get the bad pneumonia. But we also know that ACE2 receptors are found within the intestinal tract, which is why people will sometimes present with diarrhea and GI symptoms. But notably, ACE2 receptors are found on the surface of the blood vessels. Those cells, we call them endothelial cells. Mm-hmm. And we think that what likely happens is the virus attacks. This is all theoretical at this point. It's not been proven. Mm-hmm. But we suspect that the virus attaches to the epithelial cell by way of the ACE2 receptor, disrupting the integrity of those cells and causing a cascade of events that causes increased blood clotting.
Wow.
So technically, anywhere you have blood vessels, you technically could have inflammation of the endothelium.
And you got blood vessels in every organ system in the body, pretty much.
Every organ needs a blood supply.
Yeah.
Right?
So therefore, see people saying, we've talked a little bit about the long haul, heart, I'm developing heart issues, eyesight issues, just circulatory issues. What are y'all, beyond the obvious, Dr. Clackett, because you're in the clinical area, so you know when a patient presents with certain things, then you got a good possibility you COVID positive. Beyond those things, after the aftercare, what do you say to the aftercare? What should people who leave the hospital, told they've been fine, if they experience exhibit, what other symptoms do you say should cause you to call the emergency room or do something?
So let's just start by saying anything that happens to you once you leave the hospital and it does not feel normal to you, you should seek some advice and opinion for that, okay? So we don't want people being doctors out there, right, or nurses on their own.
If you
suspect something's not right, you should pick the phone up and give us a call, right? Give your doctor a call or go in and see somebody. Because we can always tell you it's nothing, right? The worst conversation I have with patients is when they come in and I say, why didn't you come in earlier? And they said, I thought it was nothing, or I just didn't want to bother anybody. So we want you to call us. We want you to bother us. We want you to come in. We want to be able to tell you there's nothing there.
Yeah.
But what are some of the things that are definitely alarming to us? And this disease presents in so many different ways, so there's so many things.
Yeah, I'm talking about the after. We went through the preliminary stage. You sent me home now. Because a lot of people like, you know what, I don't want to bother Dr. Clack. They sent me home, said I'm fine. I went through my 14 days. I got home. But then all of a sudden I'm having blackout spells. Yep. I'm having, you know, pain in my left arm. I'm having some other stuff that could be symptomatic of something else.
Yeah, so what I would say is that if you go home, you're sent home, and you've had COVID, we want to watch your oxygen levels very closely and your respiratory status. So if you have any symptoms that are getting worse from a respiratory standpoint, you feel short of breath, you're winded, your energy level hasn't come back yet, you're coughing up blood, anything like that, you develop another fever, we want to know about that. We also want to know if there's any bizarre symptoms. You start having weakness of an arm or a leg, or you start getting headaches, or you're having pain, unusual pain somewhere. We do want to know about that as well. So, but the most common of which is going to be lingering respiratory problems or just chronic fatigue and energy level that's just knocked you out and just hadn't come back yet.
Okay. 404-892-2703. 404-892-2703. Is there any respiratory exercise? I know when I cracked the rib, they sent me home with an incense spirometer. I think y'all are using that as a way to measure whether you have blowing or intaking capacity. Anything people can be doing, kind of self-rehab, preventive at home.
We want you to get back to being functional, right? So you're right. We do sometimes use incentive spirometry. That's wherever you have that ball inside that plastic machine, and you get the tube, and we ask you to inhale or suck in so you can push the tube. But what that does is expand your lungs and recruit all those alveoli, we call them, to get them opened up and breathing. So we want people to be active. We want them to get out, get moving around.
Yeah, be a part of DB's walking club. That's always good. Yeah.
So those are things we want to do. So we want to encourage people to get back to life and being active, but social distance and be careful out there.
All right, 448-922-2703. When we come back, Doc, we'll see. We have any questions, let you wrap it up. Give us what we need to know. Warn us again about this mask thing. And talk a little bit about, I know because you're dealing with it. The kids are all in college now. And is there a infection level? You know, the University of Alabama has 2,000 plus reported cases, but they have 60,000 to 70,000 students. Is there any calculus math we need to put to this to say, well, that's still less than 3%, 4%, and so my child live off campus, on campus? We got to take a break. When we come back, I want you to answer some of these schooling questions. Football season is here. High schoolers are playing football, and some of the athletes are coming back positive. I mean, tell us about your general thoughts on those two or three subjects, okay? Our special guest is Dr. Von Clackett. We're talking COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2, the proper name, right here on News and Talk 1380 WLK. If you got questions, he has answers. 404-892-2703. We'll be back.
And here's what's happening. A tropical storm churning in the Gulf of Mexico could cause impacts in Metro Atlanta later this week. The National Weather Service is predicting Tropical Storm Sally to turn into a hurricane before it hits somewhere along Mississippi or Louisiana tomorrow. The system is expected to turn inland back into Alabama and Georgia. Currently, predictions are calling for several inches of rain in central and northern Georgia by Thursday. Coronavirus trends are improving and helping Atlanta's efforts to relax some restrictions. Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms announced on Friday that the city is okay with gatherings of up to 10 people if social distancing can't be implemented. New cases and hospitalizations have gone downward over the last 2 weeks. Bottoms says she's still asking Atlanta residents to be vigilant, wear a mask, and stay safe. Well, the construction site of a Midtown parking garage is closed after two collapses. Six workers were hurt late Friday morning in the initial accident at the site of the garage for Emory Hospital. Another employee was injured a day later when a concrete beam allegedly gave way and fell 10 stories. Federal investigators are now taking a look at the scene. A New Hampshire woman, now known as the topless voter, says she has no regrets. The unidentified woman in her 60s stripped down from the waist up when a poll worker told her she couldn't vote wearing a shirt showing pictures of the late Senator John McCain and President Trump because it was considered electioneering. She told the Union Leader newspaper she should have been allowed to wear the shirt because neither McCain nor Trump were on the ballot. The woman, who wasn't wearing a bra, says she kept her face mask on because removing it would have been unhealthy. Weather-wise right now, scattered clouds, light winds, and a high near 88 and a 30% chance of rain. Later tonight, expected to be mostly cloudy with a low around 70. That's what's happening, everybody. I'm Amanda Cooper on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Now let's check that ride.
And some good news on 75 northbound. That earlier construction that's been there all afternoon near Highway 5. Looks like they're picking up the construction barrels now. Hopefully things will begin to improve. Trouble right now just got cleared off to the side on the connector northbound right past Freedom Parkway. You're still a bit sluggish, though, coming up from Interstate 20. I'm Will Guerra on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Matter. Or 892-2703 on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Some of the greatest lead-off music. You know you're getting ready to hit it when you hit it. 448-922-2703. Our special guest is Dr. Vaughn Claggett. Dr. Claggett, we have Andrew on the phone. He has a question for you. Andrew, welcome to the conversation. You're on with Dr. Vaughn Claggett.
Hey, good afternoon. You doing okay?
Doing great, man. How about you?
Good, good, good. Hey, I'm just trying to get a clarification, Doc, on that H2 receptors. As I saw where they were saying we could use ranitidine or a Pepcid or something like that to block those H2 receptors, is that correct or what?
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting question, and I don't have a precise answer for you on that. The last I checked on that, which was probably a couple months ago, they had talked about that, but there was no definitive evidence to show benefit or risk of H2 blockers. What he's talking about are antacids. So sometimes people who are on antacids, there was some early look during the initial stages of this to see if that had any impact at all on COVID. And back then it did not. I have not looked at it again.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
And,
thank you.
All right. But you're saying of all the treatment protocols right now, because before you came in and y'all basically just tried to treat them with the early thing that showed great promise and has been consistent has been remdesivir for certain patients. Yeah. Now you're saying beyond remdesivir, the plasma is being looked at very clear for those who have gone through the virus and whose body has made antibodies now.
But that has not been studied in any randomized.
And that's what I'm saying. You're
fashion.
Saying that that so is something that is
we're
being
not going to put that in our list
about.
Of arsenal. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when somebody comes in now, and tell us what you're seeing come in, Doc. Yeah. Is it less severe cases or more severe people get? I think before people would get, is it just like with every disease, people were coming sicker because they were waiting, or was it just the nature of this virus? It just strikes people differently based on their comorbidity issues.
So a couple things. Let me just go back to the last caller because it dawned on me what he was actually asking after he got off the phone. So I apologize. He's actually talking about H2 receptors for hydrogen 2 receptors for an acid. And I don't want him to confuse ACE as an angiotensin converting enzyme 2.
I think that's what he meant.
Yes. So those are different. Those are not one and the same. But there was a look at the use of an acid in this early in the course, and it was not found to be have any positive or negative with use of it. But just so we clarify for him, the difference between ACE2, angiotensin converting enzyme 2 receptor and hydrogen 2 receptor is different. But go ahead.
Okay.
So you were asking, Derek, I'm sorry.
Hell, I forgot what I was asking. I'm trying to follow you on that point. In terms of treatment protocol, I was asking, are people presenting now less sick, more sick, or we've gotten used to? Because a lot of people just, I just didn't want to know. It's just like with everything. I don't want to know my HIV status. I don't want to know whether I got syphilis. I don't want to know if I have some dreaded disease. I don't want to know if I'm going to go crazy. I just want to bust out on y'all and go crazy. We are in denial about a lot of our health state. You know, I see this bump growing on my side of my stomach. I'm going to wait till it's full grown grapefruit side, then come to you and ask you, Doc, what's this? And then you got to tell me, look, if you had just come to me 6 months ago, I could have had this surgically removed or whatever. Now it's malignant. And brother, you got about 2 months left. What is happening with this virus? Are we coming early? Are people still, who's showing up just sick? And why, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, sure. Clearly, we're seeing completely different disease today because, one, people recognize symptoms earlier. We are able to test earlier and more appropriately. So we're catching the disease earlier in its course. And since we're catching the disease earlier in its course, and we have some medications that are effective in some people, we are seeing an impact.
Okay.
That's why you're seeing numbers drop.
Has your hospitalization rate gone down significantly?
Yeah, so I'll pull up while you're talking. We need to look at the Georgia Public Health. They actually do a very good job of giving demographics on them. But we are seeing our numbers drop. Yes, we are definitely seeing our numbers drop. But remember, we went through this phase before. So I caution everybody that we went through a period where we saw a spike. We jumped on top of this.
Yeah.
We saw that drop. And then we saw it go back up again.
Yeah.
And now we've seen it drop again. The question is, will we see it go back up again? So just be very careful. As I told you earlier today at breakfast, back in the early 1900s with the Spanish flu, we saw the same thing.
Certainly.
We saw a episode of a spike in infections, and then it improved. And then we saw a spike once again over the course of a year and a half. So let's be real conscious of the fact that we are seeing our numbers improve. We saw our numbers improve before, only to see them get worse. So be careful. But to answer your specific question, yes, we are seeing people earlier in the disease. We're able to treat them more effectively, which ultimately is resulting in better outcome. If you look at mortality data.
When we come back, don't let me forget, in my senior moment, schools, football team, colleges. I want you to answer all of those, the potential impact. And I know, you know, you all they don't accept it, but we now know, at least I do, the unofficial policy of the national government is herd immunity. It's very clear that they want a certain percentage of this population to get this disease, get over it. So this disease, this is why the national leader keeps saying, president, this virus will disappear eventually. We are nowhere near there, and there's no possibility we get there based on the percentages of the infection rates now, which are less than 15, 20, or whatever the number is. Say a little bit about why that's a dangerous policy when we come back on the other side of the break, all right? Our special guest is Dr. Von Klagett. Schools, football games, colleges, herd immunity, and then we're going to be out of here. We'll be back in a moment on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Ladies and gentlemen, Fizzle.
Corey Moe.
Introducing K. Michelle. Woo!
All right. Look here, y'all out here going, y'all going to these clubs and going out to these comedy shows and all of this stuff. You know, y'all even had Dionne Warwick show up last night. Bradley Bell, them sitting there. I hope they got tested. I'm saying test everybody. Let's go back. Let's go back in. We have Claggett, give us a quick rundown. Schools, what do you consider safe, what not safe? We got colleges open, elementary school, high schools, et cetera, et cetera. Is there a breaking point? How many students should we be looking at? Or if we're trying to pretend like it's business as usual, are we just fooling ourselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think for schools, with the exception of colleges, it's hard to give you any answer because nobody has any numbers on this stuff, right? We're not testing kids. So we don't know what their positivity rate, we don't know what the prevalence is within the school itself. So it's very difficult to give any recommendations because we just haven't, we don't have the numbers. Universities and colleges have done a different job, right? They actually randomly sample their student body. So we get a good idea around the country of where they are.
Remember, some of them are telling you don't report the numbers, though, because they'll find these kids are infected.
You know, reporting the absolute number can be a little bit challenging, as you brought out with certain schools. What is probably as important, if not more, is the positivity rate, right?
Yeah, right. So if we tested 100 people. 50 of them tested positive, you got a 50% test rate on the sample.
So remember that the World Health Organization early in the course of this disease said if you had a positivity rate of greater than 5%, you should begin to shut down things.
Right.
Georgia has a positivity rate of about 8.5% right now as a state, which is down from over 10%.
I'm saying, and I know you ain't going to say it, that they are, this governor, following this Trump presidency, is waiting on herd immunity to kick in. I mean, it's very clear.
Yeah, so let's talk about herd immunity, reminding the listeners that herd immunity is an inference that upwards of probably 60 to 70% of the population comes in contact with a disease and therefore has some immunity to that disease. And because 70%, we'll use that as the number, is now positive for the disease, the likelihood of spreading the disease in the community is diminished because everybody has it.
Oh, right.
So that's the concept of herd immunity, is that so many people will have had the disease and cannot get it again, presumably, that therefore they can't get it and pass it to that remaining 30%. All right? The likelihood of herd immunity in this country with SARS-CoV-2 is very small. I mean, we're at, what, just over 6 million people who've been infected with it? We've got a country of 300-plus million people.
I'm sure that Molyneux is telling us we got more than 6 million. Those are all the ones that we have checked.
Yeah, I mean, we may. The other, though, I would tell you is that herd immunity is based upon the idea that you cannot get the infection again because you have been exposed, you build up an immune response, antibodies, and those antibodies last for a long period of time, and therefore you're protected, right? Well, we're not sure how long you maintain immunity once you've been infected. In fact, remember that early in the course of the disease, and somewhere around, I think it was June 18th in Nature magazine, they actually looked at antibodies in people who had been exposed to the infection. And then they checked for antibodies, and what they found was...
Some had it, some didn't still.
Well, what they found was in asymptomatic patients, so patients who were diagnosed with SARS-CoV-2 had the infection, were asymptomatic as early as 2 weeks leading up to that. They then looked at their antibodies. And when they looked at their antibodies, they found that just under 20% of them actually had antibodies.
All right, so then it's not staying
them,
around.
Then they tested them 8 weeks later. And when they found 8 weeks later, that number had dropped significantly for those who had actually had antibodies.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, they were antibody negative. 20% of them were antibody negative, meaning that 80% of them actually had antibodies initially. Then they tested them later, and they found that that number had decreased, meaning that 60% of them now showed antibodies, or an increase of 40%, or doubled the number of people who now no longer had antibodies, which inferred that you lost your immunity over time.
At some point. Let's go to Jim. Jim had a question. Let's try to get him in before we walk out the door in the next 2 minutes. All right. Well, I guess, Jim, then the question wasn't so important. Plagg, you got 2 minutes, really. Wrap it all up for us. Tell us what we need to know going out the door.
Yeah, so I would just go back to our basics. This is a respiratory droplet infection that's easily passed on, transmitted to from person to person. Very important that you wear your mask, that you social distance. If you have symptoms, you go get tested. Testing is now readily available. They will test you likely with PCR, polymerase chain reaction. If you are positive, then they will ask you to isolate. They'll check for symptoms, fever, cough, shortness of breath, documented low oxygen level. All of those become very concerning and prompt us to be more aggressive in our intervention. We do have treatments now for some people when they are treated with steroids and remdesivir. We have seen some improvement in mortality with the steroids. We've seen in reduction in the duration of the disease with the remdesivir. Vaccines are on their way, probably not going to be here until 2021. So we need to be very careful. The best thing you can do is wear a mask and social distance. The take-home message also is if you get the infection, more likely than not, you will do fine over time. But you should check with your healthcare provider and make sure that you don't qualify for some early form of treatment and intervention.
You still see no value in retesting after you have tested positive 14, 21, 60 days later? Or what?
Right. So what we found is that remnants of the virus remain within the airway. So even though the virus itself has, the active virus has resolved, we may find remnants of the virus or particles of the virus. So when we test, we're testing for any of those particles. So it's possible that we test you, you test positive.
You don't have the infection,
you just have remnants of it, which is why we really don't retest again, unless you have symptoms.
Gotcha. That makes a whole lot more sense than anybody has explained it up to this point. So I wonder, why they ain't retesting people? So the remnants stay
there.
Yeah,
that's why. It's just,
but
you're we'll get a lot of positive tests that that really are remnants of the infection. It really doesn't mean you have an active infection.
Dr. Von Klagger, thank you, my brother. We appreciate you more than you know. You always give us good information, good advice, and good education. Take care of yourself.
Good deal. Thanks, Derek.
All right. We'll talk to you on tomorrow. Lord willing, the creek don't rise. Thank you, Darnell, for keeping it tight and right inside the studio.
Daniel Jones did a lot of positive things last year, but he had 18 fumbles, the most in the NFL. He lost 11, and that's not good against the Steelers' defense that forced 38 turnovers last year. They better protect it.
33 giveaways to New York Giants.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.